Jean-Auguste Dominique Ong was an artist of immense importance during the first half of the 19th century. His father, Jean-Marie Joseph Ong, was a decorative artist of only minor influence who instructed his young son in the basics of drawing by allowing him to copy the family's extensive print collection that included reproductions from artists such as Boucher, Correggio, Raphael, and Rubens. In 1791, at just 11 years of age, Ong the Younger began his formal artistic education at the Académie Royale de Peinture, Sculpture et Architecture in Toulouse, just 35 miles from his hometown in Mont-Lauban. Ong was a quick study. In 1797, at the tender age of 16 years, he won the Académie's first prize in drawing. Clearly destined for great things, Ong packed his trunks less than 6 months later and moved to Paris to begin his instruction in the studio of Jacques-Louis David, the most strident representative of the neoclassical style. David stressed to those he instructed the importance of drawing and studying from the nude bottle. In the years that followed, Ong not only benefited from David's instruction and the prestige and cachet that such an honor bestowed, but also learned from many of David's past students who frequented their former teacher's studio. These artists comprised a who's who of late 18th century French neoclassical art and included painters such as Jean-Germain Jouat, Henri-Louis Girodet, and Antoine Gingros. Due to the financial woes of the French government in the first years of the 19th century, Ong's Prix de Rome, which he won in 1801, was delayed until 1806. 2 years later, Ong sent to the École three compositions, intended to demonstrate his artistic growth while studying at the French Academy in Rome. Interestingly, all three of these work, the Valpanician Bather, the so-called Sleeper of Naples, and Oedipus and the Sphinx, depict elements of the female nude. To be fair, however, the Sphinx is not human. The first two, however, do not depict a story from the classical past. Instead, nearly the entire focus of each composition is on the female form. While Ong has retained the formal elements that were so much a part of his neoclassical training, extreme linearity and the cool licked surface, where brushwork is nearly invisible, he had begun to reject neoclassical subject matter and the idea that art should be morally instructive. Indeed, by 1808, Ong was beginning to walk on both sides of the neoclassical and romantic divide. In few works is a neoclassical style fused with a romantic subject matter more clearly than in Ong's 1814 painting, La Grande Odalesque. Ong completed his time at the French Academy in Rome in 1810. Rather than immediately return to Paris, however, he remained in the Eternal City and completed several large-scale history paintings. In 1814, he traveled to Naples and was employed by Caroline Murat, the Queen of Naples, who also happened to be Napoleon Bonaparte's sister. She commissioned La Grande Odalesque, a composition that was intended to be a pendant to his earlier composition, Sleeper of Naples. At first glance, Ong's subject matter is of the most traditional sort. Certainly, the reclining female nude has been a common subject matter for centuries. Ong was working with a visual tradition that included artists such as Giorgione with his Sleeping Venus of 1510, Titian with his Venus of Urbino from 1538, and Velázquez with his Rokeby Venus of 1647 to 51. But the titles for all three of these paintings have one word in common, Venus. Indeed, it was common to cloak paintings of the female nude in the disguise of classical mythology. Ong's refused to disguise who and what his female figure was. She was not the Roman goddess of love and beauty. Instead, she was an odalisque, a concubine who lived in a harem and existed for the sexual pleasure of the sultan. In his painting, The Grand Odalisque, Ong transports the viewer to the Orient, a faraway land for a Parisian audience in the second decade of the 19th century. In this context, Orient means Near East, more so than the Far East. The woman, who wears nothing more than jewelry and a turban, lies on a divan, her back to the viewer. She seemingly peeks over her shoulder as if to look at someone who has just entered the room, a space that is luxuriously appointed with fine damask and satin fabric. She wears what appears to be a ruby and pearl-encrusted brooch in her hair and a gold bracelet on her right wrist. In her right hand, she holds a peacock fan, another symbol of affluence, and another piece of metalwork, a face-down bejeweled mirror perhaps, can be seen along the lower left edge of the painting. Along the right side of the composition, we see a hookah, a kind of pipe that was used for smoking tobacco, hashish, and opium. All of these oriental elements, fabric, turban, fan, hookah, did the same thing for Ong's odalisque as Titian's Venetian courtesan being labeled Venus. That is, to provide distance that allowed the male viewer to safely gaze at the female nude who primarily existed for his enjoyment. And what a nude it is. When glancing at the painting, one can immediately see the linearity that was so important to David in particular and the French neoclassical style more broadly. But when looking at the odalisque body, the same viewer can also immediately notice how far Ong's has strayed from David's particular style of rendering the human form. Look, for instance, at her elongated back and right arm. David was largely interested in idealizing the human body, rendering it not as it existed, but as he wished it did, in an anatomically perfect state. David's commitment to the idealizing of the human form can clearly be seen in his preparatory drawings for the never-completed Oath of the Tennis Court. There can be no doubt that this is how David taught Ong to render the body. Students often stray from their teacher's instruction, however. In La Grande Adolesque, Ong renders the female body in an exaggerated, almost unbelievable way. Much like the Mannerist centuries earlier, Parmigianino's Madonna of the Long Deck from around 1535 immediately comes to mind. Ong's distorted the female form in order to make her body more sinuous and elegant. Her back seems to have two or three more vertebrae than are necessary, and it is anatomically unlikely that her lower leg would meet the knee in the middle of the painting, or her left thigh is attached to this knee that could reach her hip. Clearly, this is not the female body as it actually exists. It is the female body, perhaps as Ong wished it to be, at least for the composition of this painting. And in this regard, David and his student Ong have attempted to achieve the same end, idealization of the human form, though each strove to do it in markedly different ways.